I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast that takes a look back at my sports broadcast career. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Andy Bulbarch joined alongside Joe Tate. I feel like there's some sort of a nursery rhyme we could mix in here. Over the timeline and through the years, to Joe Tate's mind we go. That could work, couldn't it?
Be like walking into an empty parking lot.
Oh, that is a pretty hefty vault, my friend. You've stored a lot of great information in there over the years. And today, I want to go back in time to discuss a project that you and Dwayne Kuiper put together in the, well, what we think was the late 80s, or I should say the late 70s or the early 80s. And it was called Great Sports Dates with Joe Tate and Dwayne Kuiper. So explain to the listening audience how this worked exactly. You guys picked out a number of great dates in sports history and basically just kind of tried to use your play-by-play to replicate those moments.
That's true. And the fact that I got top billing over Dwayne Kuiper is amazing unto itself. But the fellow that really was instrumental in doing the whole thing was Ray Keppen, who worked, among other places, at WELW out in Willoughby. And prior to that, he had worked he was the writer for the Martin and Howard show on radio in downtown Cleveland. I know old folks will remember that. I know you're looking at me like, what is that? But it used to be a big morning show on Cleveland radio, and he was the chief writer. And so he was the guy that put the whole thing together, and his idea was to sell it, but I don't know that it ever went any further than WELW. Tell you the truth, I don't remember anybody else ever picking it up. And then Kuiper went on to the Giants, and I went on to the Cavaliers, and the whole. And then Ray went to the great production studio in the sky, and it was all over.
So this was somewhere in the area of 40 years ago. Now, you told us earlier that Dwayne Kuiper was actually playing for the Indians.
Yes.
When this was going on.
Yes.
So how did he get roped into doing this? I mean, did he have aspirations to broadcast at the time? I mean, he's become a legend of the broadcasting business since, but this is during his playing days. So how did you guys kind of connect the dots and put this together?
Well, Kuiper was looking ahead. He's a very intelligent young man. He was looking ahead to when his playing days were done, and he thought that he might well be able to go into broadcasting. And so he was looking for opportunities to hone his skills, so to speak. And he did some commercials through Ray Keppen. He did this bit that we're sounding out today. And eventually, of course, got a chance to go with the Giants. And he'd been with the Giants forever out there in San Francisco. And I am told does a great job.
Now, you had mentioned that he kind of had aspirations. He was looking ahead. You know, when you deal with certain players, and many of whom have gone on to have great broadcasting careers. You know, we spoke of Brad Doherty in one of our last conversations, who's gone on to do a great job, not only with the NASCAR broadcasts, but, you know, occasionally he'll pinch hit and he'll step in and he'll join Austin Carr and John Michael on the television broadcast. Did you see a lot of the same things in Kuiper during his playing days?
Well, I think the fact that Kuiper was open just about anything in terms of the future, we were friends. We had the same agent, so we kept running into each other at the professional level. And it was something that Ed Keating, the late Ed Keating, was pushing as far as Dwayne was concerned, was let's look beyond your playing days to what you can do once you're finished at second base for the Indians or wherever. And so it was one of those things where we just keep running into each other, and because broadcasting was a possibility, why Keating made sure that Dwayne and I spent a lot of time together, and we were friends. It was a good connection, and I think it was this thing you're listening to now is something that had some potential, but I don't think it ever really got off the ground. I had totally forgotten about it until you found that spot on the tape.
Well, that's part of what the Over the Timeline podcast is all about, to dig up some of this pure gold from years past that in some cases got forgotten about. Now, I thought this was a great idea, too, and I'm kind of surprised it never really got off the ground. So to give all of you out there in the listening audience an idea as to what we're talking about, let's play the intro to this. It was a great Sports Dates demo that you and Dwayne Kuiper put together before this thing officially launched. So let's go right back to the start and play the intro for this particular program.
This is Great Sports Date, your listeners' tickets to 65 of the greatest moments in sports.
DiMaggio, 0-for-1 with a walk. He is still looking for his first hit tonight. Smith is set. Here's the pitch. It's lined over third. Great diving stop. Kepner, he comes up throwing. DiMaggio's out.
Great Sports Dates is yesterday's action on the 50-yard line.
A weakness, and the Browns go to work.
Ball on its own 41. Baumgarten in motion to the left. Graham back to throw. Deep. Doug Jones wide open. He's got it. He's gone. Touchdown. Cleveland Browns.
Great Sports Dates is behind home plate memories.
Boudreau up there in that familiar crouch. First inning, no score. Denny Gailhouse into his windup. And the pitch. It's hit deep and high to left field. Ted Williams goes back. He can't get it. Home run, Will Boudreau.
So that's the intro. That bring back some pretty fond memories of this program?
No. It's like listening to it for the first time. It's been so long ago, and because it was something, I agree with you. Sounds like a great idea, but at the time, it never got off the ground. Kuiper went to San Francisco. I went to the Cavaliers, and as I say, Ray Keppen went to other things and then passed away before we could get everybody back together again. It was a good idea that never really got off the ground.
And the work that Ray Keppen put in here, too, it really cannot be understated, I don't think, just how great of a job he did with that, because it's tough to make modern-day audio sound like it belongs back in the 30s, but we're going to play a clip coming up here in just a bit where we discuss the 32 World Series, where you're basically emulating Babe Ruth calling his shot, and he makes it sound like the audio's coming from back in 1932, which is really impressive. That's a very, very tough thing to do, but, boy, Kuiper was really a natural. I mean, to be able to, I'm not sure if that was his first take doing some of these things here, but the way he intros and he sets up the scene, I thought he did a very nice job with that.
Yeah, and he was a natural for broadcast. I'm not surprised that he turned out to be a heck of an announcer with the San Francisco Giants. But, Kuiper liked it, did it well, and it comes through on these tapes.
Now, you mentioned that this aired, and it aired on ELW. That was basically about it. And it's crazy how some of these great ideas just never kind of get off the ground. But do you remember meetings with these guys, sitting down trying to pick out the best moments in sports that you guys wanted to go back, set up, and then have you go back through and emulate with the play-by-play? Do you remember how many moments you guys discussed?
You know what? I'll guarantee you, I don't remember much of anything. I remember the idea. I remember working with Kuiper and with Keppen. But as far as the nuts and the bolts and the brainstorming sessions, and it may well be that Keppen did most of that himself and then had Kuiper and yours truly come in and actually do the broadcast part of it. But he was the brains behind the whole thing.
Today we're talking about the Great Sports Dates program with Joe Tate and Dwayne Kuiper and Ray Keppen. As we mentioned, he was kind of the mastermind behind all of this as well. And Joey referenced this a few moments ago, but we're going to play the Babe Ruth clip here in just a minute. You guys had to have a lot of fun putting this together, because that's one of the more iconic moments in sports history. Babe Ruth, there's that controversy. Was he pointing? Was he holding up the amount of strikes that were being thrown at him? Or was he actually pointing out to the bleachers to hit that home run against the Cubs? Let's go back in time here and talk about this particular idea and this particular moment. You guys had to have a blast putting that together.
Well, I do remember the fact that because Dwayne Kuiper, in his career, hit exactly one home run off Steve Stone of the Baltimore Orioles, and we were saying, well, you know, we're going to call Ruth's home run there in the 32 World Series. let's bring back Dwayne Kuiper's only home run against the Baltimore Orioles, but and then jazz it up a little bit. You know, and just in passing, Kuiper missed his second home run when he drilled one off the top of the wall in Baltimore, and the ball went way up in the air and fell back into the ballpark rather than over the wall, or he could have had two, and both of them would have been off Steve Stone. And, of course, we never let Steve forget the fact that Kuiper killed him for one-plus home runs.
Right, kind of one and change, right?
That's right.
That second one has to count for something, even if you cut it in half or give him a quarter. Cleveland's own Steve Stone. He went to Brush High School over on the east side. Of course, he was a Cy Young Award winner, and he's gone on to do a number of television and radio things since. So that's interesting. I had no idea that his only home run came off of Steve Stone.
Yep.
Wow. Well, let's get into the clip here of Joe Tate calling that home run hit by Babe Ruth in the 32 World Series where he called his shot. This was one of the projects you guys put together on this Sports Dates. So let's hear that clip.
It's game three of the 1932 World Series. Yankees, Cubs. Fifth inning, scores tied 4-4. On the mound for Chicago, veteran Charlie Ruth. Stepping into the batter's box, Babe Ruth.
Ruth into his windup. First pitch to the Babe. Strike one.
The crowd loves it. So does the Babe. He steps out of the box and he holds up his right index finger to show strike one.
Ruth gets the sign. He's ready. Here's the strike one pitch. Strike two.
Again, Ruth steps out. This time he holds up two fingers for strike two. The Chicago crowd is really on him now. And now the Babe lifts his hand and he points at the bleachers out in deep center field as if to say, that's where you'll hit the next pitch. For the third time, Ruth digs in.
Ruth is set. Oh, Charlie Ruth. His place is going crazy. Here comes the two-strike pitch. It's hit deep. Center field. Back, back. It's gone. Home run.
Today, October 1st, 1932, Babe Ruth loaded up. Pull the trigger and kill the Chicago Cubs. New York goes on to win this game and the 1932 World Series in four straight games. This is Dwayne Kuiper for Joe Tate. Join us next time for another great Sports Date.
That had to be a lot of fun to put together. And I mean, as you're trying to emulate that, right? You're trying to verbatim go back through and call the exact scenario. Do you find that tough to do, or was that easy to do because you had time to sit back and examine that and kind of recreate it?
Well, it was easy because Kepin did all of the groundwork. He did all of the background that we needed. I just came in and did the play-by-play, and that was relatively easy. And, of course, Kuiper just followed the script. So it was a Ray Kepin project that Kuiper and I had a lot of fun doing. The outtakes, which I did not put on the reel, were probably a lot better to listen to than the actual finished product.
That could be an NC-17 version of the podcast. We'll see if we can pull one of those out a little bit later on. But, you know, so was there a script? Did you have to read that verbatim, or did Ray just say, you know what, go ahead and ad-lib this and call this the way you would have called that 32 World Series?
Well, I think he gave us an outline in terms of what was supposed to happen. So I followed the outline. I did not do a lot of creative broadcasting. I just did basically what Kepin told me to do.
We'll have more from Joe Tate on Over the Timeline after this message from Hometown Dental.
Hi, I'm Joe Tate, here to tell you about Hometown Dental in Seville. They're my dentist, and they want to be your dentist for life. Hometown Dental offers same-day and evening hours to fit your schedule. And in emergencies like a broken tooth, they can always fit you in. All PPO insurance is accepted, and new patients are welcome. Call Hometown Dental on Center Street in Seville, or online, visit hometowndentalseville.com. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
This Joe Tate podcast, Over the Timeline, is brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.
There are so many moments in sports where I think we all wish we had the opportunity to go back and call. I don't really know that there's one bigger, if you're a baseball guy, than Babe Ruth calling that 32 World Series and listening to that clip. I mean, I think for a lot of folks who look at the broadcast business and they think, wow, if I was calling that, I would have gone nuts. It would have been great. But, I mean, you know this. You kind of have to sort of take the fandom out of that. So when I hear that, I think, wow, that was outstanding. That was great because it was exciting enough. But it wasn't over the top. And I know that's got to be tough to take the over-the-top element out of that because I think anybody that's put into that position, calling that home run, you could argue that's one of the top three biggest home runs hit in the history of baseball, right? You know, Mazeroski comes up, Robbie Thompson shot heard around the world, things like that. But that Babe Ruth calling his shot in the 32 World Series, that's got to be top three, doesn't it?
I would agree with you. And I think also back in those days, if you listen to some of the old tapes of play-by-play in football and in baseball, there wasn't a lot of over-the-top. The announcers really stayed within themselves. They created an era of impartiality, and they wanted to tell the folks at home what happened without going berserk. And that came later. You know, that's when loudmouths like yours truly used to go nuts, when the Austin Carr would hit a jumper at a key moment, or Bingo would send you ahead in the playoffs, whatever. But the early announcers in the 20s and 30s did not lose control.
Did you have any favorites from back then as far as the old-time baseball announcers that were around back in the 30s and in the 20s, you know, when that was really kind of becoming popular and baseball games were consistently on the radio? Did you have any favorites from back in those days?
When I was a kid in Aurora, Illinois, and in Elgin, I listened to the Cubs. I was a Cubs fan par excellence, and the man who did the play-by-play in those days was a fellow by the name of Burt Wilson. He lived and died with the Cubs. In fact, when I eventually got to the big leagues, "It's a Beautiful Day for Baseball," that was a Burt Wilson. That's how he started every broadcast, and that's how I started every broadcast, as kind of an homage to him. And he was the fellow. In fact, when WGN in Chicago published a 50 years of Cubs baseball broadcasting, they included, obviously, a number of cuts from Burt Wilson. And I played them back for people, and I said, "Now, who is this?" And I'd put the needle down on the tape or on the record, and they said, "Well, that sounds like you doing the Cubs." And I said, "No, that's Burt Wilson." And I never realized how much of Burt Wilson came with me to my big league career. And then that's what I tell kids today when they're starting out. Pick somebody that you think is good and copy them for openers. And then as you gain the experience, you're going to start to broaden out and develop your own style. You know, but there's nothing wrong with picking somebody that you know is good or that you think is good and following their lead until you have the experience so you can expand your own horizons. And Burt Wilson was my guy. Blaine Walsh and Earl Gillespie with the Green Bay Packers, they broadcast out of Milwaukee. And then after Burt Wilson passed away, Jack Quinlan became the voice of the Chicago Cubs with Lou Boudreau. And Quinlan was a great announcer. Unfortunately, died in an automobile accident in spring training. But those guys were the fellas that I grew up with. Red Rush, who used to do Loyola of Chicago. In fact, when I was in Chicago one time to do an Ohio University Loyola of Chicago basketball game, Red Rush was sitting in the row in front of me doing his broadcast. I was up above him doing mine. And when the game was over, he turned to me and he said, "It was like listening to an echo." He said, "Boy, you do a lot of the same things I do." And I said, "That's because I've listened to you and I used you as kind of a copy. And now I'm starting to expand my horizons. But I'm glad to know that I did it well as far as copying you." And Red Rush and I became buddies. After that, he went on to do the Golden State Warriors for a while. And there's nothing wrong with copying somebody good and going from there.
Could you equate that to being like a broadcast buffet? You're walking through the line, you pick out some of this guy's style. You walk by, you pick out some of this guy's style. For the life of me, I can't think of this guy's name. He was with the Pistons. He fills it up. Who is that guy? I can't remember his name, but you know what I'm talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
Because
yes, I do.
Every guy that's in my position, we do a lot of the same things. Like you just said, it's okay to copy a guy and then kind of make your own style accordingly.
Right.
You know, three ball, got it, wham with a right hand. That came from a guy I know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it fills it up. I mean, there's so many things you can pick up along the way, but I always look at it, as you described it, kind of like a broadcast buffet, right? Make that plate nice and colorful when you're going through the line and pick out a few styles from a few different spots along the way.
And, you know, Andy, one other thing to throw in there, while you're copying somebody and developing your own style, take the time to listen to your own work. And you'll discover at times that you just copied a guy which sounded great for him, didn't sound so good for you, so you'd better do some alterations. And you have to be your own worst critic.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful advice. Yeah, you have to be your own worst critic. There's no question about that. Well, to get back to the great Sports Dates demo that you and Dwayne Kuiper put together, got to throw this out there. We talked about some of the great broadcasting moments, and I think as kids we always think about, you know what, it would have been really cool to call this moment. And that's essentially kind of why you guys were recreating this. Can you think of a moment that you would have loved to have called but never had the opportunity to call? You know, you think about all those iconic sports moments and everybody kind of wishes, boy, I wish I was behind the mic when that happened. Are there a couple of moments that stand out to you in that regard?
You mean that were broadcast by other people that I would love to have done?
Sure.
Probably anything that Burt Wilson did with the Chicago Cubs. You know, I really worship the guy from a broadcast standpoint. I just thought he just embodied how I felt about the Cubs, and I would have loved to have been there and done, you know, once in a while when Hank Sauer would hit a home run to win a game for the Cubs. I would love to have been there just to do that one. So I'm not talking about iconic moments that we would all love to have been there. I'm talking about things in terms of broadcasts that I would like to do, and my wants and desires would expand over a longer period of time.
Well, I mean, calling that 32 World Series, that would have been pretty fun. The shot heard around the world, right, Robbie Thompson, and of course, Mazeroski, the walk-off home run in the World Series. The Joe Carter one kind of comes to mind, too. That would have been kind of cool. When he hit that home run up in Toronto to end the World Series in Game 6, that's over the Phillies, right? Wild thing, Mitch Williams came in, and all of a sudden, everything began to unravel. There are a lot. I think everybody's different, though. Everybody's different with the moments that they would have picked out. So that's interesting. I mean, so you picked out basically anything that Burt Wilson would have done.
Yep. That would have been something. If I had to walk in somebody else's shoes, rather than picking a specific moment, I would rather pick a career. And because he meant so much to me, and of course, never knew it, never met the man. I met Jack Quinlan, but I never met Burt Wilson.
All right. Well, I thought this was a pretty cool project. Sports Dates with yourself, Dwayne Kuiper, and boy, the way you guys were able to make that work, it's one of those projects we wish just kind of got up off the ground and got moving, because I think there were certainly a lot more that could have been done with that. But then again, that's why we brought it back up here today.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's why you got the shovel and dug it up.
That's right. That's why we dug it up. Well, Dawson Strong's here in the studio with us, too. This young man has aspirations of getting into broadcast, so Dawson, hop on up here, man. You've got a chance to ask a legend a question, and it could have been something right along the same lines of what we just talked about a cool sports moment where maybe you wish you would have called it. Or you could ask Joe Tate just about anything. Joe's not bashful. He'll answer just about any question you throw his way. So what would you like to ask Joe?
Oh, wow, this is amazing. Well, first off, thank you for allowing me to come see you, Joe.
Dawson, you got the greatest name for broadcasting I ever heard, Dawson Strong.
Why, thank you. I'd lean toward radio because my looks aren't exactly on par with...
Doesn't mean anything anymore, believe me.
Well, what do you ask a legend? But when did you know that radio was yours, like your calling and your forte, if you will?
I think you have to go all the way back to my early days doing Monmouth College sports, specifically Monmouth College football, when a fellow by the name of Bill Fitch, who was coaching at Co, used to scout during the football season, and he'd come over to Monmouth and sit in the little press box we were in. And when it was over, the game was over, he'd come over by and say, you know, you're amazing. You can make a 66-0 blowout sound like a 6-6 tie. And, you know, I appreciated that because I was dealing with a football team that won 2 games in 5 years. So, 66-0 was nothing new to me. And the fact that it registered with him, and it did register because fast forward to 1970, he was the man that went into Nick Mulledy and said, I got just the guy, if I can find him, just the guy to do the Cavaliers because he'll be able to take bad basketball and make it sound like it's fun. And I sent him a note, wished him well in his newfound professional career. We connected. Next thing I knew, I was with the Cavaliers. And, as they say, the rest is history.
Well, I'm a Browns fan, so I can sympathize with watching not the greatest football team. Can I do one more?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've got to know that you were in the Army for a little bit, but as far as like big decisions you've made in your life, how do you have any advice for younger, aspiring, fresh out of high school youngin?
Okay, first of all, and Andy will be able to relate to this, when you're starting out in the business and you've decided you've squeezed as much juice out of the lemon as you possibly can at this particular spot, wherever it is, make sure you got another one before you jump ship, because I have seen a lot of people have their careers ended because they didn't like where they were and they decided, I'm getting out of this and I'll be able to get something else, and then they discover they couldn't get anything else. So, when you're crossing that pond, make sure you know where the next stone is before you jump off the one you're on. That is a big thing, is take some time and learn everything you can about a variety of subjects. Because when you are in the business at a local level, you're going to, from time to time, end up doing just about everything. I started as a janitor and then ended up as the news director in 6 months and went on and did sports because I could sell it. And then I was the program director. I went through everything at the radio station in the years I was there before I went in the Army. And so I had a good basic training before I had to go to basic training.
Nice. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Nice job, Dawson.
Good luck.
How about that?
Good luck, Dawson.
How about the confidence and the poise in front of the microphone from that young man? It's the kind of stuff you just can't teach.
That's true. That's true.
That 66-0 story is one that always sticks with me. And one that that was one of the first lessons I think I ever learned from you. When you told us that story at Bowling Green almost 20 years ago now, that's one thing I've always remembered, that no matter what the score is, if you can make it sound interesting, chances are, you might not feel like it, but chances are somebody's out there listening, right?
Somebody is always out there. And one of these nights we'll do a podcast about moments when we have done things on the air, because I can think of a couple that Herbie and I did where Herb said, I don't think anybody's listening now. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and we're trying to wrap up a 20-night doubleheader here in Kansas City. And then we pulled off a stunt that it was amazing, the response we got at that particular hour of the night. So they're out there. They're always out there somewhere.
There's no question. Joe, this was a lot of fun as always, my friend. Always a pleasure, and look forward to doing one of these again very soon.
Thank you very much. It's good to be part of the Dawson Strong Show, and we'll be back for more podcasts in the future.
That's going to put the wraps on this edition of the Over the Timeline podcast. Our thanks to Dawson Strong for stopping by and being a part of this one. Our thanks to Joe Tate as well. For Joe and Dawson, this is Andy Bulbard saying thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Over the Timeline podcast. Brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.